Hello and welcome to Imps WWE Adventures Podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. You can also help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review. You can give us a donation directly through Red Circle and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Sings, Trish and Sarah, and Tunnel Talk. 7 shows here on the network at the moment. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was. First off, the only WWE news this week that matters, the lawsuit once again being brought up with new info coming to light. Previously unnamed officers in the Grant lawsuit were named on Monday, and I feel like it's dishonest to not cover the week of WWE in terms of the biggest news without starting with the stuff that actually matters compared to the TV show product, which ultimately means nothing. So CO1, or Chief Officer 1, because they referred to in the lawsuit as CO1, CO2, CO3, previously unknown. CO1 has been revealed to be Nick Khan, CO3, Stephanie McMahon, meaning in terms of like how CO1, aka Nick Khan, is referenced in the lawsuit. Well, outside of that, that means the very man who's negotiating all of WWE's rights deals, TVs and things right now, is named in being complicit in covering up sex trafficking. And to those saying that this proves Levesque's innocence, ignorance is not an excuse. By law. Ignorance by law is not an excuse. This doesn't prove or free him of anything. Given his board position, given his actions of at first voting out Vince and then bringing him back. And it would require such an incredible amount of ignorance to be ignorant as to why A, you voted Vince to not come back on that first time and then voted for him to come back. And B, your wife resigned from her job when Vince came back. This in terms of the amount of incredible ignorance that would have to have taken part in that world to be a reality. It would just require such an incredible amount of ignorance where it would be incredibly naive to be like, oh, this proves his innocence. Sure, I get it. You enjoyed the TV show. This is bigger than that. The TV show doesn't matter. And the TV show will be fine. It will be fine without him if it ever goes that way. This is far more important. Because this isn't a wrestling news story, this is a sex trafficking story. Your wrestling enjoyment has nothing to do with this. It doesn't matter. As always, Pollock and Thurston continue to do excellent work in covering this lawsuit over at Post Wrestling. I highly recommend reading and listening to their work, as well as Tim Marchman, who joined them this week. So I highly recommend going and listening to their content that they are creating and keeping up to date in as they continue to dig into this. So let's get into the show. 30 minutes. No funny quip. When it comes to the weeks where this stuff happens, you know what? You don't deserve a funny quip, WWE. You don't get it. It's not the viewer's fault. It's the WWE's fault. They don't deserve it. Anyway, let's go on down to Dallas, Texas. Have a little break with a nice little audio clip from Rock, Roman, Cody and Seth as we go to SmackDown. Right, down to Rock and Roman's main event chin wag with Cody and Steffi boy, yay. Main event times, oh, he was all confirmed. I don't always know, when I write these notes a week ahead of in advance, I don't always know how I'm going to interpret them. And I wrote it in a silly way on my notes and it led me down multiple avenues. Anyway, we had the Rock and Roman main event chin wag with Cody and Seth. Rocky soaking into the role with his villain entrance. I just miss heel Rocky so much and seeing him with the lightning and people were comparing it to Black Adam, and guess what? I heard it wasn't that good, so I didn't watch it. I know, crazy that a superhero film came out and someone didn't watch it. It was like, got bad reviews. Why would I watch a movie with bad reviews? It's that simple. Why would I watch that? Although my friend did drag me to Madame Web and I should have just said no. I shouldn't have socialised. Why did I make friends? Why did I just stay in COVID situation? Why did I do this to myself? Rocky really soaking into this role, and his entrance was such a perfect reflection of what his character's becoming on the show. I'm all for it. Roman shifting his catchphrase into acknowledge us as well. Painting on the face of it, almost like a mirage at the fact that they're together, they're the most powerful they've ever been. And I love that as an idea for where the Bloodline's currently at, where it's all on the face, and there's lots of little very, very evident cracks that things are not as smooth as they're trying to make it out to be. The Bloodline is actually the weakest it's been, but they're trying to put on a front of being super powerful. There's loads of stuff to it. I kind of like how it's kind of hinting at that stuff. The first one-on-one meeting since a press conference, Cody holding a receipt for that slap. Rhodes and Rollins enter through the crowd as the men of the people they're positioned to be. I'll get to Monday Night Raw and talk about how good Cody is at doing that. I mentioned it last week. He's great at positioning himself as the good guy hero for us to trust. Also, lol, of course the diarrhea chant got over. Of course. It's quite funny if you were to watch what happened when that takes place in the actual clip. You can see on Cody's face quite a bit of a, oh no. When he realises it and Rock and Roman struggle to not laugh at it. Just like, oh, of course that rubbish line got over. It's an amazing reaction in the ring. Rollins given some fire as the one to accept the match. He's the one in the ring with the least off it, ironically, given his entrance. But immediately extinguished by Roman, down he goes, with his crossdresser line not getting a great reaction. Like, they've danced with Rollins, Rollins has raided his wife's wardrobe. They've danced with those lines before. And I'm pretty certain those landings didn't get great reactions back then, never mind now. I'm certain they didn't get those reactions. And I'm certain they've learned from those lines that they didn't get great reactions back then, so maybe we just don't do them. I guess not. I guess they learned nothing and did it again. Rocky's retorts way better and fitting off his character. It's almost like watching Jimmy Kimmel hosting the Oscars compared to Mulaney, where the kind of joke Mulaney was doing was at the expense of a movie, but it wasn't awkwardly signalling out somebody in a room and making the whole atmosphere awkward and weird, and he wasn't insulting people about like their drug abuse and things. Very clearly, one person got it and one person is making some form of outdated style of comedy that's just not quite fitting with today. Basically, I'm saying Jimmy Kimmel's not what the people want. That's my hot take. As a foreign Englishman, that's my hot take for this week. But yeah, Rocky's retorts were the John Mulaney of this, whereas Roman Reigns was Kimmel. At least, I'm pretty certain the Reigns character hasn't had any TV time setting up any anti-LGBTQ rhetoric. Unless I've missed that and the crossdresser line is totally within his heel character, then I wholeheartedly apologise, but I don't think it is. Yeah, Rocky just calling Seth a clown emoji piece of shit, like directly straight in the Rock's wheelhouse. Straight in his wheelhouse, and perfectly works as the kind of insult that Rock's character would definitely say. I totally believe that it's what Rock's character would say to Seth Rollins. I don't believe that's what Roman's character would say to Seth Rollins. Two very different takes. Rock telling Cody, you're 20 years younger than your siblings, and you want to know why? Because you were a mistake. As Rocky does absolutely everything he could to try and goad Cody into doing something, and it was the perfect line to set up the return slap from Cody. A much needed bit of agency from Cody. He's properly positioned to take down the Bloodline, giving him that slap receipt, as Rock was teasing, almost just saying like, you won't step up to be a man, and Cody just proved him completely wrong. A great character moment. Also, hilarious that Cody's sister popped up on Twitter to laugh that they're only 3 years apart. No, don't let reality get in the way of a good story. Don't let it get in the way. But I thought it did a really good job of taking what happened for the past 2 weeks and just basically reaffirming it, getting the characters in there, and most importantly, elevating Cody. Because Rock and Roman's segments have helped somewhat position the Bloodline as that power, but you've then also got to elevate Cody, and with Cody and Seth on separate shows from Rock and Roman, that's kind of had its own little problems of you can do the character work, but at some point they need to meet each other. And this meeting did what it needed to do. I think the only thing is Seth feels so much lower down than the other three. Well, that's fine if he's taking the pin, whatever. Well, somebody needs to take the pin. Why not have it be Seth? And he can use that to set up his title match against Drew McIntyre, just to help prove Drew McIntyre's point. Drew McIntyre goes into night two being like, I told you, don't do that. Now you're coming up to me weak. Like, there's little things he can use for it. But I thought this did a pretty good job of setting things up. They're building it up with a nice little bubble. And what the hell's with that L above his forehead? That surely means something. As for the rest of the show, US champion Logan Paul opened up. Logan Paul's prime bottle revealed to be centre of the ring as WWE's first ring mat sponsor for all premium live events going forward. And the way it was revealed was used to get Logan Paul heat as well. So yeah, you go online and the immediate reaction was, oh, that's crap. But also, the way it was revealed was almost like to get you to have that reaction to it as a piece of heat for Logan Paul. he just gets it, which is so irritating. It's so irritating how much he just gets this. His prime business partner, KSI, called him from ringside, setting up old Randy Pandy, the Viper slithering out from under the ring, a nice note with the more wrestling world aware Logan immediately escaping, only for poor Honor Jedi BT to get caught with an RKO out of nowhere. Randy drinking some prime and calling it very good. Like, wow, people called him a bad actor. That's some acting talent right there. To drink a prime bottle and convince me that you thought it didn't taste disgusting? My God. What incredible acting talent. And I mean, that's the reaction you have to good wine. Like, oh, that's very good. That's the actual reaction. Don't get that reaction to prime. What's going on? KO and Randy Orton then in a match versus no entrance Austin Theory and Grayson Waller. Telling about what's been bubbling the last little while. A good excuse to get in some good stunner and RKO sales. Love how Waller sold the RKO last week and the stunner this week with the exact same spin. Kind of like a bounce forward on the mat and then spin around onto your back with your arms out wide. The fact it was the same sale, which I was really applauding of. A lovely pop-up RKO to Theory for the win before Logan Paul jumped back in with a pair of brass knucks mirroring Elimination Chamber. After that, this Smackers was a whole load of nothing. Suddenly, I've not got a lot to talk about at all. Bobby Lee Lashes versus Karrion Kross. Smackers, hottest feud, that's just, whoa. Phew, turn it down a bit, lads. The heat is just, oh, the heat, it's just, whoa, oh, man, oh. The match resulted in a schmoz of lads clobbering each other. At one point, Scarlett stopped Bobby Lashley from beating down someone by stepping in front. She got in the way of the ring post. Yep, this is a feud that exists. It's continued to do so. End of review. Tiffany Stratton versus Meechin Mia Yim. Tiffy time getting some great reactions already. Alabama Slam, prettiest moonsault ever, and Tiffany wins in a second quick match in a row. Angel versus Dragon Lee. LWO and the Gato de Fantasma interacting with Dragon Lee backstage. And I will say, I loved the way they filmed Dragon Lee's entrance, us walking towards him through the smoke. But it was another quick match, setting up Escobar and friends beating up poor Dragon Lee. End of segment. It was a show with the hot start of Logan Paul with Randy Orton in their tag match, then ending with the tag WrestleMania stuff set up, and in between a whole lot of load of nothing. Yeah, so obviously a SmackDown which ended white hot with the crowd really into the main event segments of WrestleMania, started pretty hot with Randy Orton, Logan Paul, Kevin Owens, Theory and Waller stuff, and then in the middle, yeah, whatever. But that was SmackDown. I don't know whether to call it decent, because the beginning, it was bookmarked with decency and entertaining stuff directly building to WrestleMania. Outside of that, you got characters that kind of needed TV time that got TV time, but it felt very NXT. Felt very black and gold NXT, this SmackDown. Kind of like the rhythms they would have, which is why in the era I liked NXT the most, it was also the era I arguably watched it some of the least, because you just didn't need to watch it every week. Anyway, that is the end of SmackDown. And with that, let's move on over to a different place in Texas for Monday Night Raw.
Jack Daniels throwing everything he has at Sami Zayn.
How much is Gable? Does Sami have left? How much is Sami have left? Can he hang on? His ankle's going to be shredded. Cover, reversal, shoulders down. Sami did it. Sami's going to WrestleMania.
Live from Houston, Texas, it's the IC six-man gauntlet match. Who gets to be chopped and battered by an Austrian at WrestleMania? Sami won the match, pinning Gable with a roll-up after a great back-and-forth sequence in their final stretch. And I'll go through the match kind of like in order just to sell what was building up to the Sami and Gable moment. We started off with Ricochet with McDonut, a lovelily filmed shot of Richard's shooting star press. Like I've noted before, keeping the ring to the left of the shot as it slowly pans around for Ricochet's flight really just helps emphasize the size of the crowd around them. Importantly, cutting a little before the impact, so the impact is actually captured on camera rather than masking it in the cut, which is why you make the cut in the movies. So when Kevin Dunn was trying to make his wrestling feel more cinematic, the reason the movie's cut is because there's no contact or anything. So yes, it makes sense to do that for like a super kick that's maybe not going to hit. You cut to mask the fact it's missing in the cut. But you don't do that with a Phoenix Splash. There's no reason to cut then. You show the impact because there is actually impact. Why are you cutting? You cut to mask. So why are you cutting? It's the Braun Strowman lifts up a massive production truck bit where he legitimately lifted up a production truck, and the footage of a random production guy who filmed it on his iPhone and uploaded it to the internet was so much better than the actual official product that went out, which had Kevin Dunn cutting every few seconds to try and make it feel like, oh my God, this frantic, amazing thing is happening. Let's try and keep up the frantic kind of feeling nature with it by cutting every second to be like stuck in that, oh my God, this is insane kind of level of stuff. No, he's actually doing it. You know, you're you're cutting like you're masking something. That's what it does. How did he have such a huge experience in editing and be so good at making documentaries and seemingly have no idea of the effects of editing? It doesn't like the effects of creating that promotion. It's insane. Anyway, I wasn't meant to be talking about editing. I was meant to be talking about Six Man Gauntlet. Big boy Bronson Reed, O'Shea's second opponent in the Gauntlet. The smaller lad at the disadvantage against the big man, having already wrestled for 10 minutes, and it wasn't long until the tsunami crashed on down from that same bottom right corner of the ring, which brought out Sami Zayn, the fourth man in the Gauntlet, fired up like the main event lad he's been built up to be. A nice note of Cole openly talking about Sami wrestling whilst in Ramadan. I don't think that's ever been noted before. Sami, R-E-V-E-R-S-E, sunset flip reversal, scoring the win. But Reed tsunami crashing down in anger afterwards, setting up Sami Zayn down and out for Shinsuke Nakamura, who then comes and down and wears Zayn down throughout the ad break. Naka's knee off the top miss, and Sami wasted no time immediately charging him with the snap haluva kick. Charging him down, knackered, having been splashed by Bronson Reed, having been worn down by Nakamura, suddenly now has to face a fresh Chad Gable, the most determined lad in this thing. These were the two lads most built up for the shot against Gunter. Zayn the underdog, Gable the lad who it means so much to, refusing to give in. And the crowd was so loud towards the end as Sami crawled to pin Chad after he nailed another snap haluva kick, but he was limping on his way through the charge. Gable's moonsault had missed beforehand as well, but the damage to the ankle throughout the match meant that's what had Sami Zayn limping. Light boos vindicating the right booking decision as Chad Gable switched into his top gear to deeply lock in the ankle lock once more, Sami using it to roll Gable into a pin for the win, and we have our WrestleMania Intercontinental title match, Gunter versus Sami Zayn. That should be a white-hot match. I almost feel like I want Gunter to be elevated to the main event. Getting wins on the road to WrestleMania to find the spots for Sami Zayn was a huge deal as he's trying to find all those different avenues in, which means he's not as passionate specifically about the IC title. But he can cut promos the next, three Raws left? He can cut a promo for each of those to convince us that his character really cares about the IC title. He's the right character to dethrone Gunter. Is it the right time? In terms of the rest of the show to then go through, Drew McIntyre kicked off the show with his sound character logic. I know he's the baddie, but I actually want him to win. His eventual match with CM Punk has been way more interested than a Seth bout, which should also be great. Get off my back. But the Drew McIntyre character is like the only rounded character only rounded bad guy on the show, which makes me so much more interested in his matches. Seth finally addressing focus and aligning his sights on chatting shit to Drew. I used to think CM Punk was the biggest hypocrite in the world until I met you. Donking Drew's prevalent character flaw right on the noggin, bringing that to the forefront of our minds as well. Outwardly telling Drew that on the list of things he's worried about for WrestleMania, Drew McIntyre is so low down below everything else. Like, hey, he was trying to get a rise out of McIntyre, but he also helped establish some nice little character flaws for Drew to go in on next time. Is Seth Rollins talking about that to Drew McIntyre? Is Drew McIntyre pissed that Seth Rollins isn't taking him seriously? Or is he pissed that Seth Rollins insulted him? And I feel like you can use it as both, where in reality, Seth Rollins' words worked, as in he generally is weak about that sort of thing. However, Seth Rollins' words also show that he's still not taking Drew seriously. And Drew's entire message is, I don't want there to be an excuse when I beat you. I want you to be at your best, and that's why I'm pissed you're taking this tag match. That's why I'm pissed that you're not focused on me. Because I will beat you if you're not focused on me, and I don't want there to be an excuse. I just love that as a heel attitude. Which then, of course, just pings off in a completely different direction when Drew McIntyre, eventually possibly loses. I'm so in on the Drew McIntyre character at the moment. It's one of those where I'm watching it, I'm just like, I understand you're the villain, but I would be so much more interested in this title if you were holding it. And then you got a consequence for Seth Rollins' actions for him taking the tag match as well. The only caveat is Damian Priest is still holding that Money in the Bank briefcase. And I've got a slight suspicion Seth Rollins does beat Drew McIntyre, and either you poetically have him lose the title in the same way that he won his first WrestleMania main event with the cash-in, or you mirror it in some form of different way with the Money Bank with Damian Priest and whatnot. But I don't mind the idea of him beating Drew McIntyre only for Damian Priest to then cash it in and have Seth Rollins lose the title in that mirrored fashion. I don't mind it. I really don't mind. I'm not a fan of the Money in the Bank guy just losing the title. I like the idea, especially if he's been built up this much, especially when it's a guy positioned on the card like this who just needs that bump, that elevation. I feel like it can kind of work, but they've not done the preparation for him to feel like a main eventer. So he's holding on to it feeling like a mid-card guy who, when he catches it in, there's not much hope he'll hold on to it. But he won't feel like a main event star when he wins it because he's not been positioned that way without the title. That's one thing WWE seem to constantly do. If somebody is mid-card, they don't really put in the work to kind of elevate them to make them feel like a top guy. Then they give them the title for the Money in the Bank. As putting the work to elevate them beforehand, make it feel like a big, like such a big deal when they do cash it in, rather than the just the pop of cashing it in, which you normally get. Maybe WWE is a different world. Am I analysing them like AEW? Becky Lynch versus Liv Morgan. The Irish lass keeps picking fights whilst the champion's having a grand old crack, sipping beers in the back, going all out in the match with Liv, with pay-per-view sunset, flip, apron power bombs and all. All right, Becky, like rein it in. You've got WrestleMania in a few weeks. Like, it says a lot about future intentions with her taking bumps like that for Liv. So Liv Morgan fans, calm down. Calm down. And I hear you. How about, WrestleMania isn't Morgan's time. I know. And you want immediate gratification, but okay. Yeah, but in a month, you'll also want immediate gratification then. So how about, this did her a lot of favours for after WrestleMania. How about that? How about we continue building Liv after WrestleMania rather than just throwing her into a match she doesn't really need to be and accidentally long-term stifling her momentum a bit? Liv on such a run, she even hit her finisher, the Oblivion, but Becky rolled to the outside. However, Becky snatched the win through the skin of her teeth. A snap manhandle slam for the win after Liv dove from on high with a fresh air and fried snowballs, aka the whole load of nothing. Setting up a pissed Liv as her character logic continues to get a little bit more warped each week. I love to see it. After the match, Mammy's finished her beer, Ripley focusing in on what Becky's been doing. Like I said last week, the man picking all these fights in an attempt to prove something. And Ripley's just like, you won that match by the skin of your teeth because you're picking these fights, you're getting worn down. Here I am, perfectly in incredible shape, having not taken a single bump this month. Not done anything since Australia. I'm going to be in amazing shape while you lot knackered. I just love that, the way the dynamic is kind of fleshing out at the moment. Also, backstage later on in the show, Liv and Becky were just about to kiss and make up when a rampaging Nia Jax stormed on in. Like, yeah, of course she'd be equally as pissed about getting jumped 2 weeks in a row by the lasses. That makes all the sense in the world. Yeah, of course. Nick Aldis and Adam Pearce then announced a 6-team ladder match for the Undisputed WWE Tag Team Championships. I'm assuming with new shiny titles and scrapping the Raw and Smackers separate belts, 12 men in one ladder match. That's a lot of men. WWE then took Maxine getting booed at a house show and turned it into Candice LeRae ripping into Maxine Dupri a la Christian Cage. Some people love this, some people didn't love this. But it's like a little mid-car thing which could go anywhere, so no opinion. It was what it was. It could be interesting. Though I am with my hot takes. Cody Rhodes' in-ring sit-down interview with Michael Cole came next. Cody is such a great promo. Makes himself feel like the star. Positions himself as the hero against the baddies so damn well, but also gets the story over and makes his enemies seem like the biggest deal so that he can seem the biggest deal when he vanquishes them. It's not that difficult. It's not difficult. Great how well the Cody tiers work for the WWE audience as well, when the exact same acting process actively worked against him in AEW. It just works so well for the WWE crowd. But Cody did a really good job, making it personal for himself to then use that emotion, part of that motivation as to why he's going to take down Roman Reigns and the whole bloodline, so he's going to defeat The Rock at WrestleMania in that tag match. It's all there for his character. And that's what I was talking about with the SmackDown thing, where he's really, really good at positioning himself to be the guy that you should be getting behind. He's a master at it. He's the guy. Crowd him. This is his moment. Apparently the odds for him at WrestleMania are like just insane, as in it's just not worth putting a bet on him. At this point, is the bookies are apparently so convinced it's just not worth it. As usual, has become the kind of trend at the moment. I've not got a lot of production notes at the moment, but just other things of plenty of camera shots from within the crowd this week. I don't remember them doing that last week. Showing the ring and arena to highlight shots of from the crowd perspective. Like making sure to get the crowd in the bottom of the shot to give an impression of that crowd experience. Also got a shot of a lady serving popcorn. So we're not just talking like grand arena spectacle angles. We're talking about the overall feeling of the fan experience. Also, the WrestleMania graphics looked so great. The extra effort for the individual competitor sweeps helping sell that grand stage a little bit more. Like that vibe of a little extra effort is such a big part of the WrestleMania grandeur. It makes sense the graphics and advertising it would feed into that as well. And that brings me to the end of Monday Night Raw. Another show doing a decent job building to WrestleMania. Watch the IC match. Watch Drew. That pretty much my Raw notes. Anyway, with that, move on over to NXT. Right. I'm not going to lie. This was one of the worst episodes of NXT in a while. A mixture of too much and too little, too long and too short across the segments, resulting in an unbalanced show with no medium level. A show you are fine to forget ever existed. But I guess the main event is the main talking point. Trick Williams is back with his mellow Y promo, addressing him with all of the beats that you would fully expect from the promo from Trick. But we got like a promo with like beats you would expect earlier in the show from Roxanne Perez and Trick Williams, because I don't think the script was like massively better, but his delivery was just like, no, they're there. This is the kind of guy who could be great for WWE just because he can make this kind of material this strong. You can see why they're hotly behind him. Challenging his former friend to a match at Stand and Deliver, when out comes Metaphor. They chat shit with... Also, the way that Americans say the name Noam just doesn't sound right. It doesn't sound like it's a real name when I hear an American say it. Noam. It's just not right. The vowels are enunciated way too strongly. Just let it roll lazily. Like Noam. It just makes me laugh. Anyway, out comes Metaphor. After they touch it, the lads jump in to throw punches. They fail completely. When Lash Legend takes her turn to try and throw a punch, Trick catches her, spins her around, and leans her back in her arms, and they kiss. In a, okay, right, yep, is horny NXT back? Been a while. And the answer is yes. Booker T did go shucky ducky quack quack in response. Of course he did. Best winning commentator of the year. However, it wasn't his line. Weirdly, that's not the response that got me going, wait a second, where the line that got me going was, whether it's a kiss lock or a wrist lock, Trick Williams is on fire. To which I'm immediately like, that is such a heel line. Like, what good character says that? That was instead said by commentator voicing essence of the good guy in Vic Joseph said that. Like, why does Vic Joseph have that line? Also, just the ethics and morals of wrist locking somebody into a kiss, you know. No, just going to bring that up. But I think the vibe was meant to be that Lash Legend was, that actually does have a thing for Trick Williams, and that was her moment of weakness. So what are the actual dynamics at play here? Just going to bring it up. I'm assuming it wasn't talked about. It doesn't feel like an NXT that had much kind of like in the preparation department in terms of like what was going on. It was yet another thing that happened on this show. And I think I might put this in the department of too much. Just of, it got a reaction from the crowd, but to what end? To what end was this? But he's doing his feud with Hayes, so to what end was this? To the rest of the show, tag team qualifier for the number one contenders triple threat, LWO versus OTM, opened the show. We got a lovely spot with Wilde using his big opponent as a trampoline. Aside from that, we had a match that started and then it finished with an assisted 450 off the ropes to the win. It was a match. Roxanne Perez gets her first proper in-ring baddie talky segment. But yeah, the script was what it was. Perez's delivery was generally a lot better than that script deserved. It was still just, very, very generic, and Trick Williams showed, like, oh no, there is a way that you can elevate a generic script. Ava out to inform the lass you can't just injure another lass and claim her title. It's not how it works. Like, who are you, 2007 Randy Orton? That's not how it works. Paxley run in her loyal form. Ilya went to the Don's restaurant to chat as the champion, but quite literally gets it the boot. The car boot. Later in the show, they're having a chin wag on a bridge, and the Don lays down his law. Ilya still stands up for himself, but the Don's message is also sent. This was like the cinematically filmed stuff in the restaurant. Not that well edited put together, but it was cinematic. It was filmed. It had that different, unique vibe. It still had the vibe of, WWE have filmed this. It's got a weird way of filming things. It's very strange. Yeah, I found the whole thing just a bit strange. Maybe it's because my first experience of the Don character, because I did hear quite a lot of critiques of his Don character within the wrestling kind of space and how it works. I remember it was being a bit talked about as being a bit too cartoony, a bit too down. So this is the toned down version of it, and it still feels just a bit, for the wrestling world, it's, I reckon WWE fans will love it. Robert Stone versus Lexis King in the quickest skip of my life. Obafemi teasing a match with Dijak, however. I'm in on that. Speaking of, the North American champion Obafemi faced Brooke Jensen. Oba's gonna kill you chance have officially gotten over in his matches. Good to see. Match itself. First half was nothing. Second half, Briggs came out to try and amp up his former tag partner. Ended in a whole load of nothing. A kind of nothing affair, seemingly poising Obafemi to take on Briggs down the line, as Brooks Jensen just offered nothing in the ability to stop the power of Obafemi. It's the fact that Obafemi has got presence, he's got the mic skills, and he's got the wrestling ability just to really elevate his. However this was booked or whatever, set to go, just did him no favours. Like, for me, this is not how you showcase Obafemi. Yes, you're showing off his power, but he's more than just power. You can use this as a building block for like future weeks, but in that case, this match went on way too long if that's what you're showcasing. The entire point of this is to properly showcase this man's power. Probably doesn't need to go through an ad break. Anyway, Gigi Dolin versus Ariana Grace, like, as much as I enjoy both, a double DQ crotch shot is totally befitting finish to these bottom of the barrel episode. Just like, oh yes, of course that's how this one finished, of course. At least Thea Hale got the right level of melodramaticness for the NXT crowd. A decent reaction, as in her segment she slammed down the mic with WWE's one commercially available swear, saying the word bitch, officially turning original Thea Hale again, all amped up and charging around the ring as the ones who've been poisoning her mind slither away. And finally, there was Ridge Holland versus Sean Spears. Spears trying to goad Holland into violence. It didn't work during the war, it won't work now. Snapping like he's Festus, a blind rampage building up to retribution with a chair. And you know what happens after that. Sean Spears gets the win. And that was NXT. It's a reason I blasted through it so quickly, because nothing happened. Things happened, but it was just like such a badly paced episode, and like almost all of the segments had something wrong with it in terms of structure, which is just like so strange that it was almost throughout the entire show. And when the double crotch shot happened with Dolin and Grace, I was just like, you know what, that's on par. That is on par for this. That's my review for this episode of NXT, a double DQ crotch shot. Anyway, that brings me to the end of this week for WWE. Obviously, the news that came out on Monday is the biggest thing to come out. In terms of WrestleMania, done a decent job building up the card building up the kind of excitement for the Cody, Rock, Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins kind of angles and stuff. The crowd are really behind that stuff. They're behind Becky Lynch, Rhea Ripley, Bayley and Io. They've really called off the Bayley Io stuff by just not featuring it on TV enough. And part of me was thinking, maybe did they see the fans kind of calling for Bayley, given she won the Rumble to main event night one, and just the way to cool that down is to not feature her, to make sure the audience is more excited for the thing that's actually going to main event, is the vibe I got. But yeah, both women's titles are excited, and I'm properly behind Drew McIntyre. I can't vibe. I haven't been able to vibe if the WWE crowd is like excited to see Drew McIntyre's character go further as well. I think it's not. I think they're on board for the babyface, whatever. Because like, the crowd would dissent and boo something else. They're overwatching AEW now or whatever. The ability to just watch the other stuff is so much higher than ever, and AEW are on fire at the moment. So like, it's such an exciting product. Like, they're not going to turn up to a WWE show and be like, yeah, Drew McIntyre, you're the awesome bad guy. No, instead the crowd's full of people booing the bad guy, doing what they're supposed to be doing. Yeah, it gives a different atmosphere to WWE, and I like my shows to be completely different. I want AEW to feel one way, I want WWE to feel another. I'm happy for them to be completely different places with completely different aims and objectives in terms of what they want their wrestling to be presented like. That's what I want. I don't want it to be the same. The same is boring. Products shouldn't be one way. That is incredibly boring outlook on entertainment. Anyway, with that said, with variety highlighted as the message of the day, I say thank you for listening, liking, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciate it, never take it for granted. I'll be back next week to talk about the week that was in the WWE, and with that, I bid you adieu. Adios.